You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Thanks for joining us for this week's FX PhD DOD.
Who's saying that?
Jeff Huser. Special guest on FX PhD DOD.
Who's hijacking our podcast?
The channel. It's like crossing the streams.
That's right.
Well, welcome, Jeff.
Thanks.
Good to have you this week.
We figured we'd have Jeff.
Yeah, I guess.
Welcome to California.
Yes.
Good to see you under the giant neon margarita.
Yes, yes. Enjoying the warm weather. The number of times I mentioned the weather today was...
Yeah.
But doing out here, doing some work with collaboration with the folks at the Foundry. So enjoyable setting that up. Sean and I are doing some stuff with them.
Very cool going down and seeing their space.
For a day to enjoy the sunny climes of California and meet up with some people out here as well. How are things down in Sydney, Mike?
Hey, things are really good, actually. I don't know why I'm laughing when I say that. No, things are really, really good. I'm having a good time. I don't know. You know, like I had a week off in the midweek, you know, the break week.
Yep.
And I had all this stuff to get done. And then my kids got sick, right? So that just completely screwed me. I don't mind. It's great, obviously, looking after them when they're sick. But, you know, it's just that whole thing where you go, right, I had plans to really get ahead and now I'm behind again. And, so then I've just been catching up ever since. But, you know, I got to a point, like today, I've been doing a whole lot of stuff on tone mapping, right? And it's what I call research. I mean, you know, it's like that lovely job where I know I'm going to be doing tone mapping coming up sometime soon. I'm not saying when or what course. And, but I, you know, I give myself like a month or two out a research thing. And I've been dealing with, this is a long answer to a simple question. I've been dealing with Christian Block, who wrote the HDRI handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And been doing a whole bunch of research on tone mapping and just having a ball. So it's been good.
Very cool.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. I think that I find that that's actually the thing that I love. And actually, I'm starting to do some more stuff on FX Guide with Mark helping me out and freeing me some time to work on some articles on FX Guide. And doing that kind of research is just a blast. You know, it's just really fun. It's just like really mentally stimulating. Reminds me of why I kind of dig the technology and enjoy that kind of just diving into the really technical details as well as the artistic details. It's a blast, actually.
Well, and it's one of those things that I try to explain to people about FX PhD. When you're in the throes of it, you have no time to do that. You know what I mean? It's a very difficult thing to... difficult thing to dive in and do that kind of research and stuff and to play with stuff. So, you know, I've learned so much from classes where I'm just like sitting there going, oh, thank God you told me that, because, you know, you just saved me hours of frustration. You know, the QuickTime stuff that you've done with some of the classes, the article you posted even on FX Guide. I mean, you know, that's one of the goals, is not only is it just for continuing education, but also that kind of stuff. I mean, we all benefit from this research, so it's awesome.
That was that thing about Seagraph, too, wasn't it? I think, at least from my standpoint, one of the cool things about being at Seagraph is that kind of high-level discussion and research that goes on at that conference.
I know about tone mapping. I could talk about tone mapping. I've done a certain amount of tone mapping, but that's completely different to that and let's research the bajillicans out of this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that goes like right to using the Spheron stuff that we shot in LA, Jeff, when we were... with Patrick Flannery, who was just so helpful. And that's like a $60,000 friggin' camera and does terrific HDRs at like just astonishing stuff. That's like 360 degrees by 180 at, I'm going to say, 90 megapixels or some like off-the-dial number, right? And so that stuff's really interesting. And then, of course, just the other end, just going, okay, now I'm going to do some comparative stuff with these HDRs between Photoshop and Photomatrix and, you know, and a few of the other apps and just check out what works and what doesn't. But under a kind of, as you said, John, under the non-stress of having a client sitting over your shoulder going, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's very interesting. So,
because there are a lot of times that you cut corners when you're in that situation. You've got serious amounts of like crap to get done, and it's like, you know what, this is probably not the most elegant solution, but I'm just going to go with it because I just absolutely have to get this happening right now, and I don't have time to sit here and kind of, you know, research this anymore. If this works, let's just use it.
You have to do it because you've got the impending deadline, and it doesn't matter if you've just got to get it done.
Absolutely.
Christian's book, by the way, is really good. We're going to do a review on it on FX Guide. But in the tone mapping section, he has some really great stuff. And And stuff that is so VFX relevant, right? Like, it's not just about the photography stuff. It's like doing things like getting a Hi-Con car that you've stuck with shadows on it in the desert to photograph, and you haven't got any time, and so you do a full HDR of it and then remove all the lighting and shading from it as part of the tone mapping process, so you get a blank, evenly lit texture map to project on, and that you can, of course, then apply 3D lighting to later. And it's just that kind of stuff that I just love. Mm-hmm. And he's been really helpful and doing stuff and sending us stuff, so that's great. And we're actually going to have, guys, some... like downloads for people that haven't bought his book, which are his use of HDRs as effectively a cookie, you know, like on a light. You put a little mm-hmm. metal thing in front of the lens to project an image. So he's using HDRs of real lights in 3D as a cookie, if this makes sense. So the light, which is obviously just normally a point light or a mm-hmm. directional light, shines through the HDR and has the lighting optical characteristics of that actual light. So if you're shooting with a HMI, it looks like an HMI. If it's like headlights that's illuminating the thing in front of it, it actually looks like the light that would be cast from a headlight, as opposed to just, you know, obviously computer perfect mathematical white round light that you would get from in Maya. And so he's going to give us those files so he can download them and stuff. So that's all pretty cool.
That's very cool.
I would do it just inside PhD, but he's happy to do it in FX Guide as well. But we're also going to do some other stuff just for PhD students, of course.
Right.
Because membership has its rewards.
Well, and I think this tone mapping stuff is really interesting. I was reading an article not too long ago that, you know, as a recent camera purchaser, I'm kind of going, okay, how far away are we from the cameras just capturing some of this stuff in real time? You know, being able to have a camera that can just fire, can expose itself fast enough over, you know, a range. So you don't have to fire multiple exposures and bracket and things like that. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. And I'm guessing the article I was reading was basically saying we're heading that way in a few years.
I think the thing that's really encouraging is that when it was just HDR that we wanted them to shoot, to make cameras that, you know, took HDR photos, and the reason for wanting that is that because in the effects industry we want HDRs, I just couldn't see the camera manufacturers coming at it. But the photographers have so latched onto tone mapping as an HDR final, you know, killer app, that I can see them putting tone mapping in the friggin' cameras 5 years from now, you know what I mean?
Are those the tones mapping in the background? I can hear them.
That's something recorded.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. In our headphones we heard some annoying little tones.
Yeah,
that's the Tokyo train station. Mike loves the Tokyo train station sound set for Adium X.
That's good.
That's actually an FX PhD postgrad pinging at me in the background continually.
Yeah,
Jim from.
So if this was live, we'd say bugger off and leave John alone. But
say Filmbot. I'm actually going to type him now, so he's listening to the podcast that he knows when he was doing this.
Very funny.
If the person gets an email or got an email 3 days ago from John saying, "Please stop doing that. Hi, how are you?"
Yeah.
So anyway.
No, it's fun.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting stuff. And Mike, that's a really good point, isn't it, though, about expanding market to bring that stuff to us, because it really is a fairly limited market.
Well, but, you know, like you said, the photographers.
Architectural industry and so
sure,
forth.
Sure, but the photographers are getting into it, and rightfully so. It's like, well, you know, now people have stopped thinking, can digital be as good as film? And they start thinking of ways to make it better than film and produce, you know, results like that, you know, tone mapping and things like that, that are just like, all right, that's a different thing. You know, I can shoot this entire, you know, range from light to dark and infuse it all together. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, cool. Looking forward to that.
Yeah. I've been loving the photography class this term, and I've been really auditing a lot of classes this term.
I've been loving the flame class, and the flame class has been fun with Victor.
I'm behind now. That's right, the new voice of Victor. I haven't gotten to that one yet. I'm behind.
I'm not the voice of Victor anymore. I've been tossed.
You've been replaced.
I used to be the voice of Victor. I'm now redundant.
Victor is getting the point that Victor is going to be the voice of Victor soon here, I think.
Well, I don't mind being the voice of Victor.
I don't mind either. I just appreciate
it. You know, the
stuff.
Well, I remember you were saying when you were doing the original PF track classes, you were like, "This is really great because I actually get to learn it as I'm doing it, doing all the revoicing."
Like compulsory learning,
Mike,
right?
Yeah.
You don't get to sort of
I told Mike that.
And read something online while you're listening. You're paying attention.
I was watching Mike when I was down in Australia for a month last term when he was doing the PF track course, how he went through, looked at it, took some notes and stuff. And it's an interesting process. And then I started thinking about it. For me, I found it, you know, fairly straightforward doing the flame. But for Mike, especially in those early days, it did the PF track.
Yeah, it's an app you have no idea.
Like, you have no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
If Victor doesn't say something he's doing, it's like, I know what he's doing. I can fill, you know, I can do whatever.
Yeah, on the flame. But yeah,
like,
obviously,
if it was some app I'd never used before.
Yeah.
So kudos to you, Mike, for that. Nice job on the...
kudos to Victor, actually.
Well, I know, of course, but yes.
And you know what's really interesting? And I say this now, and it's going to sound like I'm sour graping or something. I'm absolutely not. But let me just say this, because I think it's an interesting phenomenon. We were just totally adamant, oh, I'm the voice of Victor, right? Which is exactly as it should have been. What I found really interesting, and I have no problem with this whatsoever, but I just think it's interesting, is that every single person that posted about the courses that I voiced only ever spoke to Victor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mentioned that to you. Yeah, I remember saying that.
To the point that they understood it was Victor, and
exactly.
Even though they were hearing my voice,
yes.
It was like, Victor, you said this, Victor, you said that. In this course, Victor, you said...
That is funny.
Which I don't have any problem with, but it was just funny that human nature, being what it is, that you can kind of... you know, do that to your own.
And I was really glad, as I told you, I was really glad to see that. And again, nothing against you doing the time of doing that. But of course, it was, you know,
totally.
Victor, it was great because they recognized that it was him doing it. And I'm glad because that could be lost. So,
I know. I mean,
that was
totally
fantastic.
I wanted nothing for it. I was very, very happy because, you know, obviously that's exactly how I wanted it, right?
Yes,
hence
totally.
The joking line about voice of Victor. But it was just interesting, I think, that whereas at the beginning I was expecting, you know, there to be a bit more like Mike and Victor or, you
right.
know,
right.
blah, blah, blah. They were just completely, they just heard Victor, even though I was speaking, which means that I should really be careful that I didn't say something that Victor found highly offensive, because
mm-hmm.
it's like holding him accountable. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, yeah.
Yeah. I had this weird thing of going between Victor and then I'm or we're or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
How do we refer to us and what we're doing? But anyway, fun stuff. It's been enjoyable as well. So
you get your pronouns, proper pronouns.
They are. Yeah.
I
gotta say, I'm not that. Yeah. Well.
Beep beep beep. There were some beeps.
It's the lovely Jennifer Huser entering the room, the FXPHD recording studios.
Yes, we
yes,
are.
We are.
We are live.
Not only that, Jen, you're now actually recorded. So I have to ask a couple of questions.
Yes.
Which is namely to say, what cool stuff do we have to tell people about this week, John?
What cool stuff we have to tell people about this week?
Pause.
I've been working on some stuff that we'll be able to talk about really soon behind the scenes, I think. Working on improving some kind of features of the site that I'm really excited about, that I'm busting to talk about, I think, once we get that out.
Well, I think we've already discussed the notion that we're doing...
Oh, that's true.
More in the area of certification.
Certification.
And, examination and qualifications.
That's a good point.
Continuing. We have a whole team of people that have actually been working on that problem. That's why I was surprised that you didn't jump on that as soon as I gave you the
Yeah, you know what? I don't know why I'm being stupid about that. You're right. I've just been working on getting the exam stuff together. It's kind of funny. Actually, I tried to kind of roll my own from some of the pulling some open source software from some other sites and shoehorning it into our site and so forth, and then just decided to bite the bullet and have our PHP god wrote up a 12-page spec for him outlining what we needed and so forth, and to get him started, and it ended up being so much easier. You know, he was able to kind of start turning this stuff around really quickly. So our goal is to have a couple exams here at the end of the term, after the end of the term, after the 10th class and a couple of the courses, where you would actually come and take an online test, a timed online test, effectively be an open book test. And if you get a passing grade, you would actually end up getting a certificate.
Now, I wanted to talk about some of the philosophy behind that, because I think it's pretty interesting. Firstly, I was slightly skeptical a year or two ago about the whole idea of an online exam when we were first starting, because I'm thinking, well, you know, A, somebody could cheat and blah, blah, blah. But there are a couple of things that I want to point out before we point to that, because that's obviously a concern. Is firstly, if somebody was to cheat, like, they're going to cheat, right? But at the same time, they're going to put things on their showreel that they didn't do. So,
yeah.
You know, this is not like winning some prize, and this is, you know, getting a job. And if you falsely claim to do stuff or know stuff you don't know, then, you know, you're going to really have a gutser. And, yeah, and
you know,
you are really going to screw up, and that's bad for your reputation. And in this industry, your reputation is everything.
Right.
Secondly, life in this industry is kind of open book. Like,
I think that too, yeah.
Yeah, like I know that if I want to understand the down-resing algorithms for the Red camera to go from 4K to 2K, that there's a whole lot of options there, like linear and bicubic and stuff. And I can't remember exactly which one is which exactly, but I know where I can go to look that up, and that I don't have anything wrong with that. Of course, you want it to be timed so that it's not like, well, you know, I come back tomorrow
That's just what it's like when you're doing something on the job. In fact, it's like you've got to come up with the answer within a given time frame. So, yeah, it's totally, you know, especially for the level of certification, you know, the more advanced ones. You know, several manufacturers have this online testing for their entry level, the level one certifications. They're all done online. And
exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to.
That's the open book
you're
thing.
You're exactly right. That's what turned me around when I did the shake.
The shake.
And I was like, you know, this kind of works. Plus, the other thing is, it's not the same questions, right? So it's not like if you go, the answer is A, B, 7, 4, D, 1, and 3, and then the next person signs on, they're going to have different questions. So it's not like you can just sort of, you know, get a mate to give you the CRIP code of right answers to give. So, you know, I think it's reasonable, but I think it's like all these things, right? If you're an ethical, honest person, it'd be incredibly useful to an employer. And if you're not, well, then as John said, you're going to cheat and do something weird.
You're going to do it anyway, and you're going to pay for it
end. You're going to get found out eventually.
You know, I think that's going to become really clear when you get in your job and don't know what you're doing. And you know, also with our standpoint too, we talk also about keeping some of the integrity going with the verification codes as well. So that if someone else goes into a job that hasn't been in PhD, of course, they can get a copy of the certificate, mock up their own name, mock up their other thing. But in comparison, you can actually give the employer, potential employer, the verification code to actually come to our site to say, hey, you actually have taken it. You know, it's not going to take it on the cheating aspect of it, but it's going to verify that at least, you know, you were a member of the site, took the course and passed the class. So those are the kind of things we're trying to put in place to keep the integrity of that going.
It's a very cool next step. I like it.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. It's really interesting though, and a very big kind of a bit of a learning process for myself actually to sit and try and break apart the test and all the questions and all the possibilities that might come up in how these things work. How might we want them to work in the future? Will you be able to take the test more than once or twice if you fail it? You know, how long will the test be open? How are we going to control access to it? When can you take it? All these things. I can't tell you the amount of detail that it takes to actually think through a process of it. And I'm saying that because it has been a while that we've been talking about it, but just these things take time because they actually are pretty complex considerations in trying to plot these things out. So.
Yeah, anyway, no, it's astonishing to me, but also it's a good thing that we build these things, but we try and make them, you know, work out of the gate, right?
So be robust.
Hopefully when you guys, you know, get to these things, you go, yep, somebody's put some thought into this, rather than, well, we've got a system up and it's not working and it started to work and then it's never worked since and they said they were going to fix it and they never got around to it, you know, yada, yada, crap.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe we'll call this first one a beta, you know, beta test, who knows, but it'll be fun. So anyway, looking forward to that by the end of the term, and that's going along really well. So getting some great help, actually, from Martin on that. Been fantastic.
Very cool.
So that's fun. And also, actually, behind the scenes, and we've talked, again, this is the same kind of thing that goes hand in hand with this test, is this idea of setting up this wiki that we're doing. And Mark's been helping me that, and he's been spending a lot of time with that. And again, it sounds really simple to just throw up a wiki and start entering information. But when you start looking at how you want to organize it and make it clear and make it, what do we want to have here? Who do we want to be able to edit? How do you want to have it organized so it's not this huge top layer or it's not 30 layers deep that you're clicking through and stuff like that?
Yep. So no, it's very difficult. I've been involved with a couple of wikis like that. Yeah. It's like, wow.
Mark just started a couple of weeks ago, but he spent a lot of time in figuring that out. But we're getting closer and closer. And Mark's the kind of guy who, too, also, I think, Mike, you mentioned it when you were talking before the podcast, the kind of guy who likes figuring out that kind of stuff and getting that framework together. He's totally into it. Comes from, I think, his background and helping at QA at Apple and Shake and so forth. He kind of got some insight to that process. So
yeah, we're really glad he's on board because Christ knows we couldn't do it without him. I mean, he's...
And I'm in a much better mood. Mike's John is so not a bitch anymore, or at least as much.
John would be like, as I see, because we have this problem, and I think you guys probably understand this, right, that we want to try and do the things we say we're going to do, and totally holds to that in the sense that we're not going to promise shit and not deliver. But also there's this thing of, like, I don't know, we don't actually have a lack of good ideas. Like, I don't want to sound arrogant, but people send us things like, it'd be a really good idea. Yes, it would. That was a good idea, yes. And they go, well, are you going to do that? Well, no. Why not? Well, because you know what? There's like 50 things that are really good ideas on the list right now. And it's not that we don't, you know, like the ideas per se. It's just...
It's internal, too. I mean, the number of times we've been at NAB or something and somebody throws something out and John's face just goes blank because he's like, oh, crap, that's a good idea. And I'm the one that's got to do it. And I have no time.
No, it's good. Yeah. Well, Mike knows that now. Mike knows my reactions, I think, well enough now, too.
Even without seeing your face. Yeah.
Even without seeing my face. The long pause.
There's a pause. And
it's like, that's right. A really good idea. In fact, we had a discussion yesterday that we were talking on the phone. I had one of those things where he's like, I thought you said that wasn't good. No, I said I didn't have the time to do it.
Like a year later,
I thought it was like a really good idea.
We're up to that on the list now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Every now and then something just pops up on the site and you're like, hey,
Mike and I both feel, too, that we want to keep our eye on what's going on in the forums and make sure that everything's what we're doing now works well and is efficient. We're delivering things and getting things out there and so forth. Which, by the way, oh, Mike, you're mm-hmm. right. We actually have signed up a new smoke professor. So one of the big things, it was a difficult process, is we were failed, actually, no other word for it, failed to deliver the full smoke course in the October term.
Felt really bad,
and it caused a little bit of stress on my part, and again, just felt bad about it, honestly, something that we failed in doing. But we've got a new smoke professor that we'll be having new smoke courses beginning with the April term, just because what we want to do. The reason we're waiting then is just to make it really structured and make sure it gets done from the start. He's going to be working with me in Chicago, so we'll have really good...
Have another problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just don't want that to happen. And all the members who had access to it in October are going to have access to the new course. Okay, not the term per se, but the course discussion forums and everything. So you'll get that. You'll get all the classes with everybody. And again, we wanted to... You know, after that, I felt like we really just wanted to make sure that it got off and done right. So very excited. So what we're going to do in general terms in the course, which I think is fun, is we're going to be taking a look at a commercial project or commercial style project to start to finish. So over the course of the term, you'll work your way through the smoke from loading the EDL, taking a look at the UI and stuff in the beginning, but loading the EDL, then diving in the timeline, using the editing functions, how do you compare it against the work picture, and then how do you start doing color correction and grading, and then into the DBE action module. So I actually think this course is going to be better than the one that we had planned.
I know we can't say the professor yet, but I know the professor, and I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, actually we can. Chris Cranus is
good. Yeah,
yeah. Chris Cranus from Soul Design Effects.
Worked with him there when I was at Seoul.
Worked with Autodesk or Discreet, I think, at the time as well. But he's one of the smokers in town.
He's well-known in New York, too. Yeah. He's lived in New York for a long time, in Chicago for a long time.
So very excited about it. So, yeah, Mike, there was a lot of new stuff this week. Where was I?
The tricolored corn chips, the margaritas, and the thanks very much for playing.
I am at the Neon Margarita headquarters, so...
Speaking of cocktails, we are going to be doing stuff at NAB as well. There's been some chat in the forums about that, so we're definitely going to.
Yes, yes.
And I must say I was pleased, I think is the right word, with the reaction to the background fundamentals that we discussed in the last DOD, because I did kind of preface that I knew it was going to be a bit of a risk going there. But while there's been, I think, a slightly less discussion about it than maybe a normal background, certainly, the quality of the discussion has been really good. And I know you've been talking about that, Jeff.
Yeah, I worked in TV news for a long time, and several years anyway, and still have lots of friends who do. So yeah, it definitely touched home, hit a nerve. It was very interesting.
We're gonna be happier. Sorry, go on.
You are, yes. As I said, can we have some puppies and flowers? Come on.
It's definitely puppies and flowers. We're going to do stuff. Actually, there was, it's part of the original, because that one was obviously moved up. Let me just explain what's happening. There's, we're going to do a showreel one as part of this term. And then what happened is we struck a deal with one of our postgrads out of Asia, and we're taking his reel and redoing his reel. But then I got an opportunity to get the, and I think I can say this because we're almost 100% confirmed on this now. We're going to get feedback from one of the, I won't name them yet, one of the major effects houses in the world have decided that they're happy to look at both versions of the reel, the previous reel and the new one. And so we'll get their opinion as recruiters as to, you know, what they look for in reels and use this showreel as an example of, well, you know, what do you feel about this reel versus that reel and how would that impact you differently? And would you, obviously it's the same material, but would you perceive that individual any differently? And so that was why we delayed it, because we're getting this, these major recruiters, and they had to be in the country at the time, and the time that they were going to be in the country changed, but they are now scheduled to do that. So that's going ahead. That's what moved up the Dart Center one. So if we allow for that for a second, this week's one is on games, and we're discussing the gaming industry, roles in the gaming industry, and salaries in the gaming industry. And that should be some fun, because games are
games fun. Huge. And Jeff and I were just talking today too about that. This idea too about the, I think we talked last week about the, there's a huge business in just even theatrical trailers for games now before the games come out and so forth. It really is an entertainment industry.
Yeah, we were just remarking even as we drove by the Electronic Arts building down in Playa, whatever, down by Marina Del Rey.
Yeah.
Playa Vista. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, we drove by the complex with the soccer field and basketball courts and punching bags and outside in the park there next to them.
It's a big entertainment force.
It's quite an industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pretty tough one, actually, because, you know, as we're discussing in the thing, the big problem with games is that you don't have the secondary and tertiary markets. Like with a movie, you know, you get several bites of the cherry, right? You get the movie, and then, of course, you get the DVD sales, which can be just almost as big as the movie, right? And then the network sales and, you know, online sales and airlines and just about a gazillion other things, right? Not to mention just, you know, the idea of them re-releasing the film later because it's the collector's edition and then the collector's special edition DVD and so on and so on. Whereas if you get a game that comes out, you're not going to re-release unless it's like very, very rare. Like, we're talking 20 or 30 years later, you're not going to re-release the game. You're not going to say, well, we're re-releasing Myst,
right,
and expect the whole market to go, oh, I love Myst, I'm going to buy that again.
Right, you're right.
You expect a new version for the new platform, right? You would happily buy Myst again if it was running on Xbox 360 kind of thing, but not, you know, just the original version that only ran on you know, whatever that was, a G2.
But my God, the market for the games thing, though, what was it? World of Warcraft crossed 10 million users? That's monthly subscribers.
That's the thing, isn't it, though? I was going to ask that, Mike, about the idea of having turning online stuff into that, like online subscription members,
exactly,
which is
the massively
a huge
online,
focus.
Games is where it's at for that very reason, that the revenue stream continues as opposed to being opening weekend.
Right.
And you would be insane to be wanting to favor, you know, doing just a straight, you know, game. I mean, people say, oh, the games will be really big on the iPhone. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they will to a point, but,
right,
you know, we're not in the same zone as World of Warcraft, which is just unbelievable.
No, you got to figure the economy of World of Warcraft for just that amount of cash is huge. I mean, it's an economy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just, and they have a game that's more popular, I understand, overseas. One of their older games is very popular in Asia, I guess.
Yeah.
Still, so I mean, these companies just
Korean
market's
huge. Pretty interesting for what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're mentioning that, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think interesting. Yeah, all that on the online subscription stuff, even, so what, Second Life, too.
Oh, yeah, really that's huge, too.
Se, but, yeah, I guess it is, you know.
Yeah, I've seen that. There was a guy at work who
alter character in Second Life.
Whose brother did concerts in Second Life, and I was watching that one day. It was like, oh, my God.
Well, that'll be interesting, too, though. That'll be good. Yeah, actually, you know, Mike, going back to the background, someone was pinging me in the chat channel on how funny last week's podcast was. And I'm like, God, didn't we spend half the time talking about...
Oh, really?
I was afraid,
like, you know, we're trying to lighten it up at the end a little bit, because I started thinking, oh, my God, this is kind of a downer. That's what caught me off guard at the end. I was like, oh, that was the funniest podcast. I'm like, okay.
Really?
I think it's, I'll have to listen to the end. It must have been something towards the end. Anyway, so.
You can probably always tell when I've listened to the DOD, because I'm usually chatting one of the two of you afterward, because I feel like I need to continue the conversation. It's like, oh, hey, I was just talking to those guys. Yeah, hey.
It is weird. It is weird when you've got friends on podcasts, like you're walking the dog, and I'll hear John talking about something, like, and I'll be like, so wanting to have a phone call when it's actually a podcast in my earpiece, if that makes sense.
Yep, oh, like, absolutely. Huh?
I don't know. You know, the other thing that I'm fascinated with at the moment, it doesn't fit into FX PhD and it doesn't fit into FX Guide, so I don't know where the hell I'm going to do it. But I've just become a bit fascinated with the kind of tech community, I don't know, whatever, of podcasting. Not the podcasting industry per se, but the media groups around it, like the Revision 3s and the, you know, the way that they're all evolving. And I'm really keen to see how they will weather the current storm with the stock market and stuff, right? Because some of these companies, like, I mean, the big guys, right, really low burn rate, very close investment, not a lot of VC money, blah, blah, blah. But some of the other companies are, you know, $16 million in second round financing. And I'm just thinking, man, there must be a squeeze on these bastards to make some money.
Oh, yeah.
And untested distribution channels, too. I mean, it's still very, very Wild West as far as how everyone, the best way to get the content and how to get that. And,
it's very weird. You know, I mean, the only one I know that right now I think has got a lot of buzz factor that I keep hearing about is the Mahalo Daily. They seem to be doing pretty well, the Mahalo people. Mm-hmm. And that search engine, the human-powered search engine they've got is really interesting if you've played with that at all.
I haven't. Mahalo Daily, though, it's because of, what's her name? From
Veronica Belmont.
You know, yeah, Veronica from, who, by the way, just sounds exactly like your wife. but that's just because I got it straight in the head and I have, you know, you all sound the same to me. she is such a talent, right? And she split from Buzz Out Loud. And I've got to say, as much as I like Buzz Out Loud, it's just suffered tremendously from her not being there, you know. And I mean, there's a whole lot of things you can discuss about that, like the whole fact that I'm getting a bit tired of just panel shows that have sit around talking about RSS feeds. But and there are some really interesting, you know, podcasts looking on. But I think there's another whole layer, as I say, which is this whole idea of the media companies that are young, that are setting up to try and tap into this stuff and how viable they are in doing it. And, you know, to a certain extent, some of these people survive on having a hit show, which makes you kind of think that it's a bit like the days of studios and networks, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, I would say that it's absolutely going to happen that somebody's going to come up with something that gets enough saturation that, you know. Well, what did I just hear? I just heard that Perez Hilton has got a record label division coming out of one of the studios. One of the studios has given him a little section of record label to develop. It's like, you know, he's a blogger who does basically, you know, rude gossip stuff, and he's evolved into that. I mean, it is definitely becoming a source for new, you know, for discovering new talent and fostering new attempts at finding business models. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
I just think it's like it's interesting how things are developing. It's interesting how there are these kind of models that are built of websites where the hook is the participation of the audience, right? And so, you know, there's sort of like, there's a sense of people handing stuff out. Mm-hmm. And there are some breakaway hits, right? Like Dig Nation, right?
Of course.
It's just, you know, power to them, right? Don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is that there's some stuff where they go, well, we're going to get this community, and then this community is going to do something, and it's the collective power of the community doing something that makes it work, right?
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't work if you don't have where the people are. Like, if the people are there, it's worth being there. And then there's other ones where they're going, well, we're going to produce content and act like a TV. So I'm thinking now of, like, Al Gore's thing. Have you seen that? His, which he set up a while ago, where now I'm spacing on the name of it.
Al Gore's thing? Yeah, I can't remember the name either.
But, you know, and so you've got, I don't know, like a whole lot of interesting business models all kind of, am I going to work on, you know, some kind of way of interacting that we don't provide the content and everybody does it? Or am I going to provide something that's working on the basis of a broadcast model now applied to the internet? And then you get this whole thing about, you know, whether it should be free and who's paying for it, and then the advertising revenue, and is the advertising revenue coming? And what I'm finding is interesting is that I just constantly get reports about how many billions of dollars that are now being pumped into online advertising, but I don't think it's being pumped into friggin' banner ads. I think it's being pumped
into
microsites. And,
yeah, that's actually diminished dramatically, the growth spending in that area. I mean, it's still a growth area in general, but the far and away is definitely the streaming media type, the audio and video podcasts that are happening. Mm-hmm. That's where advertisers are interested in sinking their money. I'm just questioning the distribution channels are just interesting to me. What I really like about the things like the iTunes model mm-hmm. or the podcast subscription type model is it's easy for us
yeah.
as an audience.
Yeah, yeah,
same with TiVo. I mean, that's the brilliance about TiVo and DVR. Well, now with Apple TV,
I mean, like The Onion, yeah. I saw a story on CBS Sunday Morning the other morning about The Onion doing their video thing, and I was like, wait a minute. I bet that's available on iTunes. And sure enough, it was. And it subscribed to it, and it pops up on my Apple TV. So now when you come home, you check the TiVo, and okay, there's stuff in there. And then, hey, what's over there? You know, it's great. And I watch FX Guide TV that way.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't like iTunes, whether it's just like whatever. You know, but get my point about that is the idea of having something that's easy to get the content.
Right, absolutely.
Take a look at what NBC did when they pulled their content off iTunes and put it on.
Idiots.
What's the friggin' site?
Hulu?
Yeah, that was a big success.
Has there been any way,
I mean, is there any feedback on whether that's been a flop or what?
I have read more negatives about it, actually, in what I've done. Yeah, that it has not been a success.
I cannot imagine the amount of money they had to spend to build this thing and to continue to spend to keep this thing going and keep it developed to get back.
How do you spell it?
It's H-U-L-A, isn't it?
Yeah, H-U-L-U.
Hulu, HLU, I believe we tried to watch a show. There was a show that we missed on TiVo or something. I think we tried to watch it once on Hulu. And I think when you fast-forwarded to try to find the part that we missed, I think we had a power outage or something like that happened. And when you fast-forwarded, every time you stopped the fast-forward, it played a commercial. So you're trying to find where you left off in the show, and every time you stop, you had to wait 30 seconds for it to go. So I would have bought the damn show on iTunes. I wanted to see the end of the show, you know? Yeah. It's ridiculous. They had me as a customer, and now they start their own thing up that they think is better, and it's like, it's a bad model. It's just not done well.
Yeah. The thing is that they'll be back, but they weren't making that much money in the grand scheme of things. That was another issue for them. It was kind of an easy issue for them to pull out of it because I think Mike and I were looking at the figures.
I never once bought a piece of show from NBC ever.
Until
and then I was.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Agree.
It's like, so it went from zero to something.
I mean, I think iTunes was great. I mean, I think this also comes to a thing about honesty, right? Like, I think that what they need to get into their heads at almost a society level is that unless people offer good ways for people to get their content for a sensible, legitimate paid model, you just push everybody into doing it illegally. And then you grow up with a generation of people that just think that it's okay. If I don't get caught, it's okay to break the law.
I will tell a story really quickly. Gilmore Girls, I think the final episode. My wife was a big fan. The day of the final episode, I think it was the final episode, it was one of the later episodes, there was a big fire in L.A. Blew it out. Not on TV. Not available. We went searching for it. We're going to buy it. iTunes. Not there. When are they going to rebroadcast it? They never announced it on the broadcast. During the fire, you'd think they'd say, hey, we're interrupting this show that's a big show.
Yep.
You know, popular show on our network. We would, you know, never announce when it was going to be shown as a, you know, rebroadcast. Nothing. I had it in BitTorrent, in my hands, in high def, before I could get any answers, which I never got any answers till like 2 days later. They finally said, okay, we're going to broadcast it on Sunday night at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, hey, if they made it available in an easy, quick format, I would have paid for it. No question about it.
And that format is not streaming.
No.
Oh, God.
No.
It's not. You know, I get to that and I'm like, you know, fuck that.
The other thing that's really funny is traveling around with an iPhone in Australia. And watching people sit beside you because we don't have them here, right?
Right.
So you can use it as a phone. You're just going to get bankrupted, right? But you can use it just as a... And now they've released the Touch. It's less of a case. But when it first came out, if you had one of those stickers, you wouldn't get to watch a movie on an airplane because people would just keep on interrupting you to say, can I look at that?
That's funny. Yeah. I was just telling John before we started this, you know, I load mine up before trips with PhD classes that I'm behind on. I use Visual Hub. I drag and drop them. I just sit there. It batches them, puts them in the format, and I just throw them in there. And it's like, it's awesome. It really works well. I mean, it's less effective on the screen capture ones as much, but like Background Fundamentals, Red.
Oh, those look great on Apple
TV.
It's
awesome. Yeah,
VLP projector.
Yeah.
They look good.
Yeah. But even the screen captures are fine.
Actually, Angie looks better on FX Guide TV.
Discuss Visual Hub because I don't know, everybody knows about Visual Hub.
Visual Hub's a Mac piece of software. It's like, what, $30, I think, or maybe less that you. It might even be $14. I don't remember. It was cheap. I can't remember the name of the website, but if you search for Visual Hub, it's out there.
Yeah.
In Australian dollars, it's $26.
Yeah, $26. Yeah, I think it's like $23 or something like that. It's some weird number.
Means it must be about, what, $400 American? No, sorry.
But I was wondering.
Just stop plummeting the dollar. That would really help.
It would really help, I know.
Well, Texpansion.
Texpansion.
TECHSPANSION. com.
How'd they come up with that number?
I don't know. It's great, though. I'll tell you what. Dollars. I tried to do something the other day. I had about a five-minute thing that I needed to convert, and QuickTime Pro crashed on me every time. Dragged and dropped it over onto Visual Hub. Nice. Boom. Done. Perfect.
Yeah.
The other thing about Visual Hub that's really cool is you can make a DVD with no menus. So if you want to just take a reel, for example, and throw it on a DVD, or a movie you've made in QuickTime or in Final Cut that you just want to throw a quick DVD without having to get into authoring, drag and drop the QuickTime movie of any form onto or Windows Media File, whatever you want, onto Visual Hub, select DVD, hit go, it'll burn and author it. You put that in your DVD player, hit play, it just plays. No menu, just go.
I'd be interested to know if anyone's listening too, because I'm obviously way less familiar with Windows. I basically use Windows too.
By now, I doubt anybody is, but you know.
Well, you're right. That was a misphrased sentence, was it not?
But no, I think there must be a Windows equivalent.
But is there a Windows equivalent to that? Because honestly, the only thing I use Windows for now is check to make sure the Fusion VPN is up and running and see what our site looks like in Internet Explorer. Yeah. But other than that, it's a tool, a toy.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I'd be curious if there's other things about it. I just don't see, when I start looking for PC software, I don't see that same kind of easy integration and nice UI, ease of use stuff that I actually see on the Mac. And, you know, I don't want to be an Apple fanboy.
No, I know.
But I don't see that, and I'd be curious because I know it's come up a lot in the forums as to what people use to convert that stuff.
No, I mean, the thing that's great is you can select iPhone, iPod, you can select the format if you want it, you know, or Apple TV even. There's a checkbox for that now, so you can just, you know, if you've got your classes, for example, and you want to send them onto an iPhone or an iPod Touch or whatever, boom, select it. It'll grind them out for you in a batch process. Do it overnight. Yeah, we got to go. We've got to wrap up.
We've got to wrap up. But this is a fun one. We should do this more often. We should do a three-way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of looking forward to NAB because we'll be able to do it.
Yes,
in person,
we will be
right?
doing
it.
Yes.
That's right. Those are always better.
And we'll also be able to do podcasts. But anyway, with that, I think it's time that we leave for the day, I guess. Mike, great chatting to you.
Yeah, good, man.
And take care. And again,
hey, have a margarita for me.
Will do, man.
Where are you going tonight for dinner?
Hey, I went to that margarita place, Mike, that you've always wanted.
I took John to Baja Cantina today for lunch.
To the cantina?
Baja Cantina, the one we go to down by in Venice.
Told me about it a lot, and I've never been able. Mike's always.
Did I tell you I walked there the other day, Mike? Friday, I walked there from the house.
Cool.
I was very proud of myself. It was a 3-mile walk.
Miles.
I enjoyed it.
3 miles.
I'm gonna, when I get there, I'm gonna have to get my walking shoes because I want to come with you, man.
You put a margarita on the end of a stick and I'll follow it 3 miles. No problem.
Yeah. And we'll give more information out of what's happening in NAB and how you can grow up
and
do stuff.
Yeah.
So,
looking forward to it.
Definitely got something. Well, thanks so much, man. And thanks everyone for being part of PhD.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.